I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, SCOTUS issues a key ruling on therapy for gender-confused youth. Plus, a multi-layered attack against the new state income tax is underway. And Washington voters were sold a crock of crap when it comes to ST3. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Huge ruling from SCOTUS. And it's an 8-1 ruling, which really tells you something. But this is one of those stories where we need people to get past the headlines, because the headlines have been absolutely atrocious across the board. Just a couple examples from AP and New York Times. Supreme Court rules against Colorado ban on conversion therapy for LGBTQ plus kids. From the New York Times, justices reject Colorado law banning conversion therapy for LGBTQ minors. It literally sounds like the court is saying you can use conversion therapy on gay kids, which of course is not what the court is saying. So basically, this case was brought by a woman named Callie Childs. She's a licensed professional counselor, and her office is in Colorado Springs. And Colorado, and this is going to sound familiar because things are very similar in Washington state and some other blue states, basically said, you know, back in the day, obviously, you had these horrible medical practices that would try to, like, get the gay out of kids, right? And that's wrong. I think we all as a society have moved past that. But then when the trans stuff came around, they tried to apply some of those principles to kids who are gender confused. And so they basically said, you can't, in Colorado, if you're a therapist and one of these gender confused kids comes to you, you can't say anything about even suggesting that they maybe are just confused, or that there's underlying issues that are leading to them, a boy to believe he's a girl, or a girl to believe she's a boy. And you can't even really acknowledge with your patient the biological reality of what their gender is. And we've heard very similar stories like this from therapists in Washington state, where it's like, I can't even have a legitimate fact-based conversation or therapy session with this client because they're considering it conversion therapy, essentially, if I even tell this kid or talk about their biological reality. So the headlines are crazy because it makes it sound like, oh, in Colorado, you can undergo conversion therapy. You have your kid send your trans kid to a doctor to get untransed or ungay, which is just not the case at all. And I think for anybody who cares to read past the headlines, the fact that the ruling is 8-1 should tell you something, because across ideological lines, I'll let you all guess who the one dissenter is. We'll get to her dissent in a moment, but I'm sure you all can guess. But I want to read this a little bit. So really important here, this therapist, Callie Childs, the Supreme Court ruling. So this is the ruling overturning the lower court's decision making here. And it was delivered by Gorsuch, but all but one of the justices signed on to it. So it says, Ms. Childs did not take issue with Colorado's effort to ban what she herself calls long-abandoned aversive physical interventions. Instead, Ms. Childs objected to Colorado's law only as it applies to her talk therapy, therapy that involves no physical interventions or medications, only spoken word. Ms. Childs' as-applied challenge ran this way. With respect to gender identity, she claimed, the law permits her to speak in ways that encourage a client undergoing gender transition, but the law prohibits her from speaking in ways that help a client, quote, realign his identity with his sex. So this therapist didn't challenge any sort of aspect of the law that prevented her from, like, a physical medical attempt at conversion for gay kids or trans kids. But what she's concerned with is it's a First Amendment argument. It's a free speech argument where the government is going in and regulating her words and talk therapy, but only in a certain way. So the government allows her to say things to her client that are gender affirming, but it doesn't allow her to say anything to her client that might be deemed as not gender affirming. And so in this case, 8 of the justices say that's a blatant violation of free speech in the First Amendment. It says the First Amendment stands as a bulwark against any effort to prescribe an orthodoxy of views reflecting a belief that each American enjoys an inalienable right to speak his mind and a faith in the free marketplace of ideas as the best means for finding truth. Laws like Colorado's, which suppress speech based on viewpoint, represent an egregious assault on both commitments. This is their ruling in a nutshell. Colorado's law banning conversion therapy as applied to Ms. Childs' talk therapy regulates speech based on viewpoint, and the lower courts erred by failing to apply sufficiently rigorous First Amendment scrutiny. This is the ruling from Gorsuch, Roberts, Thomas, Alito, Sotomayor, Kagan, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. Ketanji Brown Jackson is the only dissent. Now, there was a separate ruling just written in agreement, but with some other points in it from Justice Kagan and Sotomayor. And they're honing in, and this is just so relevant to what we're dealing with in Washington State. They're honing in on the viewpoint discrimination. So they said the court today decides that the Colorado law challenged here as applied to talk therapy conflicts with core First Amendment principles because it regulates speech based on viewpoint. Now, they said if Colorado had instead enacted a content-based but viewpoint-neutral law, it would raise a different and more difficult position. As the court states, government must, quote, nearly always abstain from adopting viewpoint-based restrictions. So it sounds like they're giving Colorado, those two justices in particular, a direction to go here, which is, hey, you can regulate the speech of these medical providers, but not in a way that has viewpoint discrimination. So they can't, you could change the law so you can't speak supportively or negatively about a desired gender ideology. You can only go through typical therapy steps and all these things. So if they applied it that way, then they're saying maybe the Colorado law, maybe we don't rule on it the same. So the dissent from Ketanji Brown Jackson can be summed up in the very first sentence of it, where she quotes from existing case law. It says, quote, there is no right to practice medicine which is not subordinate to the police power of the states. Basically saying that the government has full control over acceptable medical practices, which is kind of a scary sentence when you think about it. I mean, in some ways, you know, I understand it, but there's no right to practice medicine which is not subordinate to the police power of the states. So basically saying in all ways, in all forms and fashion, the government has control and should have control over how medicine is practiced. But as the rest of the justices point out, and as this provider points out, she's not trying to medically prevent conversion therapy. We're not talking about medicine she's doling out. We're not talking about procedures. We're talking about speech. We're talking about what she is and is not allowed to simply say in a therapy session with a child. And so that's scary stuff, but it is so relevant to so much of what we talked about in Washington State. You'll remember the story of Tamara Pitsky. So Tamara Pitsky first told her story in the Free Press, where she came out as a whistleblower. She had been a therapist at Mary Bridge in Tacoma, and she basically came out and said, as a therapist, I was just told, affirm gender, affirm their desired gender, affirm their desired gender, and send them to the gender clinic. She was ultimately fired after blowing the whistle, but this was a very similar situation where she could not have any conversations with her clients about, okay, is something else going on here? Are you maybe not transgender? Are you maybe not a boy? Could this have to do with childhood trauma, childhood abuse? She couldn't do any of that. And that wasn't by law, that was by her employer's own practices, which is you're not allowed to challenge their desired gender ideology. You're just allowed to affirm it. And then once you affirm it and sign a little document, we'll send them to the gender clinic to be medicalized. She came on with us. She's been on with us numerous times. But I pulled this clip of her from an interview we did in 2024, where she was talking about how critical it was to get away from that practice where licensed therapists can't really even make an attempt to get to the root of what's going on with kids.
Kids are so, so confused and so lost. And it's our job as adults to guide them, you know, and it's unfair, I think, to create an environment where medical professionals aren't allowed to use to exercise critical thinking, and where they're telling parents like, hey, if we don't do this thing, your kid's going to die. Like, that's just not what the evidence is showing. And so we need to be able to create an environment where it's more holistic, where we're like, yeah, this is absolutely causing your kid suffering, but let's not just, start them on hormone therapy.
Yeah, and it's so obvious. And she would tell these stories of these kids with severe trauma in their background, 12, 13, 14 years old, who would come into her office, and her employer just wanted to send them to the gender clinic to have their breasts cut off, or their genitals cut off, or start them on hormone therapy or whatever it is. And she wanted to sit there and talk to them about abuse they suffered as children, weird ways they were acting out. What was leading up to that? Could that be what's going on here? And she wasn't allowed to, as and her employer, but in Colorado, the entire state, like the state is dictating that you can't have an open dialogue with a young person who comes to you for therapy and is gender confused. So huge 8-1 decision. I already see Democrats vilifying it. Congressman Adam Smith of our state put out this thing saying, I have deep concerns about conversion therapy. Of course you do. Of course you do. I think it's a realistic thing, totally reasonable to have deep concerns about conversion therapy. But this isn't conversion therapy. This is just having a fact-based conversation with a child that comes in and acknowledging what their biological gender is. So yeah, when most of us, 99%, don't support conversion therapy. So, oh my gosh, if there was ever an example of needing to read past the headlines, that's it. And this needs to go much further. I mean, state laws and all of that, but this stuff is so intertwined at every single level in states like ours, states like Colorado, states like California. Any adult in any position that's not the parent is just told to affirm, 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 affirm. Never question, never question. We told the story of Eleanor Holman on the show, who's still missing, by the way, 3 months, 16-year-old girl, was essentially transed by the Puyallup School District. And what did her mom tell us at the time? She was seeing her counselor at school, and the counselor just seemed to be constantly pushing her toward being transgender, being Elliot and not Eleanor, giving her information on gender clinics, and not dealing with some of the real life trauma that Eleanor had in her background. So that's just an example. I mean, whether it's a therapist, that's under the thumb of the government, or a doctor under the thumb of the government, or a teacher, or whatever it is, all of them are programmed and forced and told, you must affirm, affirm, affirm. So nowhere along the line, unless it's happening at home, nowhere along the line is an adult allowed to say, let's hold on a minute. Maybe transitioning your gender at 13 isn't a good idea, because the government in these blue states just doesn't allow it. So this Supreme Court ruling is huge. It's a huge victory. And for it to be 8-1 is phenomenal. Now, I do worry that Colorado will go back and just tweak the law to say, hey, okay, well, you can't be in there encouraging and affirming gender either, because I do think that they should be able to sit there and talk to kids about, you do know your real gender, right? You do know that you were born a boy. Let's talk about that. So just wild stuff. All right. The surest sign yet that rich people are leaving Washington State. I don't know if there is a better illustration for the capital flight that is occurring in Seattle and Washington State because of a whole number of things, the capital gains tax, but now the income tax on millionaires. The Columbia Tower Club is closing down. This is like at the top of Columbia Tower where all the rich people go to socialize in a social club. Here's the announcement they sent to members. Dear Columbia Tower members, for 4 decades, Columbia Tower Club has been a place where Seattle leaders connect, collaborate, and build community. With the addition of the Collective in South Lake Union in 2018, we expanded our presence in the city with a more modern, flexible club experience. After extensive review, we've decided to consolidate our Seattle operations into a single location and move forward with the Collective as our primary club in the market. Blah, 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 blah. So the Columbia Tower Club will close on April 30th, 2026. And let's be honest, the Collective isn't as fancy-schmancy. I've been there for an event before, as the Columbia Tower Club. The Columbia Tower Club was like, if you're rich and you've made it in Seattle, you get a membership to the Columbia Tower Club. Oh, and just the bathrooms. Have you ever been there? You go in, the bathrooms, you can see the whole city from the windows in the bathrooms. It's beautiful. And I have to imagine that if they had enough rich people who wanted to be a club member, and for the record, I'm not a club member. I only have friends who've invited me there. But I have to imagine if they had enough rich people who were staying, spending their money in Seattle, all these tech people, that they could do both. They could have the Collective, they could have Seattle Club, and they'd both be flourishing. But of course they're not. And that is the truest sign I mean, couldn't have written it more perfect. Now the Rainier Club just has to close, and that would really seal the deal. All right, I want to update you guys on all of the fast-moving efforts to fight the income tax since it was signed into law by Governor Ferguson yesterday. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to get involved. Okay, so there is a ton going on, and oh my gosh, it is going to be a really busy few months until November. I mean, think about it. It's already the midterm elections. Midterm elections are already very busy. There could be up to four initiatives. We know for sure there's going to be two, but there could be two others on the ballot. There's like five state Supreme Court seats that are up for grabs, which is a majority of seats on the state Supreme Court. There is a ton going on. I know I'm forgetting stuff too, but there's a lot going on. And this income tax thing adds a lot of other activity over the summer. So very first thing after the income tax was signed into law, because signing it into law, you had to do that before any of the challenges or efforts to repeal it could begin. So we already know, we talked about this yesterday, the Citizen Action Defense Fund immediately announced it would be filing a lawsuit led by former State Attorney General Rob McKenna. And this is on the constitutional grounds. The income tax is blatantly unconstitutional. As you know, in our state, your income is considered your property and you can't tax property in this fashion in Washington state unless you were to amend the Constitution, which they don't seem ready to do. So that is going to be more of a long-term thing. That could take a couple years for that to happen. But in the meantime, Let's Go Washington, led by Brian Haywood, announced something very interesting. They said that they are going to file a referendum to repeal the income tax on millionaires. You might think that's a little weird, but here's the statement from Brian Haywood. We're filing a referendum to repeal Governor Ferguson's unconstitutional income tax because, unlike King Bob, we believe that the framers of our state's constitution meant it when they wrote that all political power is inherent in the people. Now, you might say, Brandy, but I thought we couldn't run a referendum on it. Because you'll remember that the tool that Democrats use constantly is they will attach an emergency clause onto the end of something. And if it's an emergency, then you can't repeal it via referendum. And why do they do that? Because it's much easier and much less expensive to run a referendum on a law than it is to run an initiative on a law. So Democrats have started to do this more and more often where they'll just say, look, somebody's going to try to repeal this in a referendum, something controversial. Let's stick an emergency clause on it. And then they can't run a referendum. In this case, they added something similar, a necessity clause. So what is going to happen here? Well, this is clearly a strategic play by Let's Go Washington. They are going to file a referendum. And what will happen? The Secretary of State will refuse it because he'll say you can't run a referendum on this. It has a necessity clause. And then my guess is what's going to happen is they will immediately turn around and sue. So you'll have the different lawsuit over the income tax and the constitutionality, but then they will sue over this sort of abuse of the emergency clause, necessity clause that Democrats have abused in earnest for many, many years. And so they'll basically say, look, you're undermining the constitutional right of voters by putting a necessity clause or an emergency clause onto something simply to stop a referendum. So this is really genius. So now you've got the two prongs. You've got the long-term legal challenge. You've got the referendum that'll turn into a separate legal challenge. And then, of course, my phone has been off the hook. I've had people text me, when is there going to be an initiative? When can I sign an initiative? What is going on with this? So I think that there is going to be, you know, you got to do these steps first. So the first thing they're going to do is this will be like an emergency hearing on the referendum when they sue. So that's going to play out first. But Let's Go Washington, if you look at their website right now, you've already got the ability to pre-order signature sheets. So clearly they're planning an initiative, whether it's going to be in 2026 or 2027. I'm not sure. They might wait and see how the referendum thing goes. But you can already use your first name, last name, phone number, address, and then you can request sheets. So as soon as they have an initiative, they'll mail out the sheets to you, and then they can collect signatures very, very quickly. So for people who have been asking me, when is this going down? I don't know for sure when it's going down, but I do know that Let's Go Washington is already in the early stages of planning for it. So we've got the constitutional legal challenge. We've got the referendum that is going to turn into a legal challenge. And then you have an initiative waiting in the wings. And then, of course, you have a lot of legislative seats that are up, that are going to be on the ballot in November. And you have those five state Supreme Court seats. So that really is a whole nother tentacle to this. is you better believe that the people who are opposed to the income tax and the people who are in favor of the income tax are going to be spending a lot of money on those state Supreme Court seats. Probably more than any time in any election year in the history of Washington State, you're going to see ads for those things. They're going to spend big bucks trying to make sure that the state, the court either stays with this very progressive majority, or on the other side, they're going to try to flip it to people who would rule against an income tax on the basis of constitutionality. So this is going to be one hell of a busy election cycle for sure. Our friends at Future 42, by the way, I just want to point this out. They started a new offshoot of their website. If you go to IncomeTaxWashington.com, IncomeTaxWashington.com, you can sign up for their this newsletter. It says it'll send you clear, factual, timely information about the Washington proposed income tax, which is now law, of course. And so this is going to be specifically a website where they're going to have all sorts of stories, news stories, information, updates on what is happening with the income tax. So obviously, we also will keep you up to date, but that's a good place where it's all going to be IncomeTaxWashington.com from our friends at Future 42. All right, coming up next, I think voters are owed a refund on Sound Transit. Back in 2016, if you were in the ST3 zone, voters passed ST3. They were promised all of these different places that the light rail would go. Oh, it'll be here, it'll be there, West Seattle, Ballard, all over the place. And you've been paying a pretty penny for it. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of extra dollars a year, only to find out that all the stuff that you were promised is probably not going to happen at all. So what happens to the money? Do people get their money back? We'll discuss that coming up next. First, happening tomorrow. Is it tomorrow? Is it only Tuesday today? Oh my gosh. I thought it was Wednesday. What a deep depression that sends me in.
You love being here.
I do love being here, but man, I thought it was Wednesday. Happening on Thursday, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital is having one of his Know Your Risk live webinars. This is his Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar, April 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. I just chatted with him yesterday. A lot of it's going to focus on what's happening in Iran, oil prices, any concerns you have about your portfolio. And then he's also going to talk about AI, crypto, and tech. And of course, they always do a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, how they're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible, which is what everyone wants. But definitely some reasons to kind of be leery right now. I see all these headlines out there about recession imminent. So join the webinar. Ask Zach all your burning questions. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Okay. So over the weekend, the Cross Lake Connection of Sound Transit opened, and all the who's who of Democrats came out for it. Look at that little ribbon cutting. Who we got here? Senator Maria Cantwell. United States Senator Patty Murray, I see Claudia Balducci, I see, oh, there's Governor Ferguson, new King County executive with his cute little child. Oh, and Dow Constantine, who failed up harder than anyone's ever failed up in their lives and is now the CEO of Sound Transit. So this is the Sound Transit that goes across the I-90 bridge. And what opened, it goes from Judkins Park in Seattle to Mercer Island. So that's the Cross Lake Connection. Here's a video of their first trip across the water. Look how happy everybody is. Oh, look at us go. Hi, waving. Oh, there we are. This is so exciting. It's just awesome. Look at us. Celebrate confetti. Now, the only reason I play that for you is because, you know, they're obviously painting this with a really rosy brush. And I'm not saying it's a bad idea. The traffic's terrible. I'm not saying that the concept of having light rail or light rail in general is a bad idea, but clearly light rail brings along with it some challenges. Crime, homelessness, substance abuse. Here's how the first couple days at the new Mercer Island station went.
SLC to Mercer 1, did you say that the individual crossed the right-of-way?
He crossed the train line. He took him across the train. I'm just going to keep telling him to. So he doesn't want to leave the property, so.
Can you stand by for LRB 154 Bravo headed eastbound? There's reports of a man sleeping.
I made contact with the individual that was sleeping on the train. Everything's so far.
Copy. Did the individual get off the floor?
Yeah, he got up. He got off the floor and he's sitting down in the seat now.
We are getting reports that there is a individual on LRV 148 Bravo. It is a woman screaming. We have video proof. And the individual is telling us that security got on the train and got off while the woman is screaming.
we have reports of an individual smoking heavy eastbound.
We made contact with an individual. He said he wasn't smoking on the LRV, but the operator was pounding on the door. But he wasn't sure what he was talking about. But everything is cold for right now.
Man is 30, American administered. Fire started at this time, so there's nothing. He doesn't need any medical help.
Oh, let's celebrate. Just the first couple days. Someone passed out. Another dude trying to smoke fentanyl or something. Woman screaming. Security does nothing. Guy trying to walk on the tracks. Overdose. Administered Narcan. I mean, this is what it is. First weekend with the nice, shiny Mercer Island station, which Mercer Island's like one of those well-to-do, highfalutin areas in the state. They are not going to like the element that brings over to Mercer Island. Not in the slightest. But that's not the story I wanted to focus on today. That's just typical, typical Mercer Island. That's going to be a doozy. So while that's all happening, and they're there, and they're, oh, confetti, and this is such a big deal. Keep in mind that that is... cost $3.82 billion. It was 3 years late and $60 million over budget, okay? So while they're celebrating it, just keep in mind, way, way over budget and past its due date. And at the same time that these new lines are opening, some of the future lines that were promised to voters might not even manifest. This is from the Center Square. Says, while the rail link is 3 years late, other parts of the estimated $180 billion system may never even get built because the transit system is nearly $35 billion short of funding. The transit line connecting downtown Seattle to West Seattle, which is the next link scheduled to open in 2032, is the subject of intense debate by Sound Transit board members as to whether it should be scrapped or reduced. Transit stations in the Ballard section of Seattle, in Everett-Tacoma, and a whole transit line between Kirkland and Issaquah are also in danger of being cut. So last week, there was a board retreat for the Sound Transit Board, which I wonder how much money they spent on their board retreat. Couldn't have done it just with a Zoom meeting. So they basically said, look, we are way, way $35 billion short of funding, so we might have to scale back these grand plans that we sold to voters about where the light rail is going to do. So here's the three plans that they gave for like some trade-offs. Like, how can we save money here? One of the things, I know it's kind of confusing, but one of the things that became very apparent is none of these plans include Ballard. None of the plans include Ballard. You have one of the plans that doesn't get it all the way to West Seattle, which is frustrating to people. You have another plan that doesn't go all the way up as far north in Everett as they had promised it was going to go. You have a couple that don't kind of extend as far south into Tacoma as they promised it would. But none of them include Ballard. And so you have people who are livid, who might live in some of these areas where one of these plans now say Sound Transit isn't even going to reach, who are like, well, what the hell have I been paying for then? Might have voted to approve it because they're like, oh, great. I live in West Seattle. I've lived here my whole life. I would love to have Sound Transit here because traffic is horrible. Or Ballard, you know how hard Ballard is to get to? Sound Transit to Ballard is a great idea if you can do it on time and on budget. And this is what people were sold in 2016. This was a graphic put together by the Seattle Times that talked about, hey, you know, if you're going to pass ST3, it would add 37 stations and 62 miles of light rail by 2041. But it was going to increase property taxes, $25 a year per $100,000 of assessed value, increase sales taxes, and of course the car tab fees. Yearly increase of $80 per $10,000 in your vehicle's value. And as you remember, when this thing passed, which it did, holy smokes, car tab prices skyrocketed. And what was on this graph of what they promised? All the things that they're now saying might not come to fruition. So what do you do in a situation like that? As the voters, you're just sort of screwed? Like, wait, wait, wait. I've been paying hundreds of extra dollars a year in property taxes, in car tab fees, and now you're telling me I'm not even going to get the thing that I voted for, that I've now contributed thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars to? Dan Strauss, who's the Seattle City Councilman for Ballard, not happy with this. Shouldn't be. He said, Sound Transit needs a plan to get to Ballard. Anything short of that is unacceptable. The Ballard Link extension is projected to serve the most riders of any project in Sound Transit history and would do so at one of the lowest costs per rider gained of any expansion. Sound Transit needs to sharpen their pencils, do the analysis, and bring us a plan that gets to Ballard to keep the promise made to voters. Now, I agree, but at what cost? That's what I'm balancing in my head. Is voters were clearly sold a bill of goods that isn't really coming to fruition. They're already $35 million, $35 billion, sorry, short of funding. So I'm not going to say fulfill your promise to voters at any cost and on any timeline. Because if they come back and say, all right, well, we can do Ballard, but we're going to be it's going to cost $50 billion and it'll take until 2060. I'm going to say, yeah, let's not do that. But what I'm concerned about is that that is more so the direction that they would go, is rather be like, we got to cut our losses here because we can't do this, or it's going to just take a lot of time and a lot of money. They're going to be like the California tracks to nowhere. I mean, like the projects that like double, triple in price. So I'm very curious. I mean, to me, I would say almost cut your losses, because is that kind of screwed up and voters spent a lot of money on this already? Yes. But the cost to taxpayers, if they don't cut their losses, I feel like is going to be far greater, because the government can't be trusted. Now you've got Dow Constantine, one of the most incompetent politicians of all time, who's in charge of Sound Transit. And I know he's not going to be able to figure it out. So I'm very curious what you guys have to say about that. Do you cut your losses and just say, okay, just do whatever the cheapest thing is and let's move on? Or do you try to get what you voted for? Do you try to get your money's worth and what you've paid into for all of these years? Can't trust the government. Can't trust the government in a state like Washington. Coming up next, oh my gosh, our friend Andrea Suarez being banned from tiny house villages and our friend Jonathan Cho being arrested in Las Vegas. What is going on? First, it is the last day of March, as many of you know, but for one more day, Valentine Roofing is running its promo where if you get a free roof, or if you get a roof with them, they'll give you a year of roof maintenance for free. Not a free roof. Get a roof with them, roof a year maintenance for free. And so what I would do, if you've been thinking about that, you want to take advantage of it before the promo is over. So call today, 206 Roofing, to schedule your free estimate and try to lock that in, because that is just such a great value. If you already know that your roof is nearing the end of its life and you're going to have to get one anyway, why not get it at a time when you can get a free year of roof maintenance? And you can enjoy those seasonal checkups, professional care to keep your new roof looking its best. If you're like, Brandy, I don't need a new roof, that's fine. Valentine can help you check off your outdoor to-do list, exterior cleaning, let them handle your gutters. So if you need any of those services done, call 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing, and schedule your free estimate today. And of course, you always know that you're going to get the Valentine experience guaranteed with every project. Seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service, 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. And of course, tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, our friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle, which is a citizen-led organization that's trying to deal with the homeless crisis in ways that the government simply refuses to. One of the things that Andrea has been doing, and also our friend Jonathan Cho with Discovery Institute, is they've been exposing the reality of the dangers of the housing first narrative, where it's like, let's just take these drug-addicted people off the streets and just out of sight, out of mind. And so they put them in these, you know, affordable apartment complexes, and then those just turn into de facto drug dens. Or they try to shoo them into tiny house villages, and those just turn into de facto drug dens. And Andrea has documented a lot of this. Here's one of her videos.
Inner Bay Tiny House Village.
And this is the drug house right here for people that do drugs.
What?
So you come do your drugs, if you're going to do fatty or something, you come in here and do it. No animals are allowed. And you come in there to do your fetty. Nobody says anything or anything. And Narcan's up here. But
what about foil? Are they passing out supplies to do it?
No.
You get that air home. Why? No. What a depressing. Look at this chair. It's like a suicide tank.
Heater. Usually it's full of people.
Really?
Yeah, it's the end of the month. So everybody's running out of money.
Oh, boy.
It's funny because, like, the drug dealers or something like this, they're in there smoking with people. Nobody's in their room doing fentanyl. They do it there and have a problem, there'll be somebody around close that can deliver the Narcan
you know, what we saw was a fentanyl smoking room. We see dealers are your neighbors. Taxpayers are funding dealers to be housed for free for as long as they want until they get caught. I mean, is that right or wrong?
Well, it's society. Mm-hmm. You know, it's every, well, it, you, there ain't no kids here.
Is this out of sight, out of mind?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Andrea can never go back to the tiny house village now. She's been banned from the property. So she had gone to do a previous video exposing some of these drug dens, put that up online, went crazy viral. And then they're like, you're banned. You can't come back here. And so then she got that guy, I think, to let her in so she could film another video showing the drug den thing and everything that's happening there. She sent us a statement saying they booted me out and increased security because they don't want their dirty little secrets told. The developers simply don't care and the city turns a blind eye. It is indeed evil. And I get messages from Seattle police officers all the time sending me pictures in like some of these Plymouth housing facilities where Jonathan Cho has been in there, you know, in showing on video the filth and drug abuse and stuff that's happening in these taxpayer-funded housing complexes. And there'll be pictures of Andrea and Jonathan saying, if you see these two people, call security. Like, they're not allowed in. So because they're just showing you, that's all she's doing. That's all Jonathan's doing. They're just saying, hey, here's what's happening behind closed doors. Your tax money is going to this. Is this really helping these people? All very legitimate questions, all very legitimate things to point out, they're banned. I even heard I was banned from, was it Plymouth Housing or something? Jonathan told me, I think it was Plymouth. I've never even gone. Never even gone. But because I released a video this like 6 months ago highlighting Jonathan's coverage and being critical of this housing first sort of policy, they're like, you're banned too. What do you mean I'm banned? I've never even been there. So it's just crazy that that's the homeless industrial complex. They don't want it exposed because if you expose it, all the money goes away. This is just about money, 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 money. And Andrea Suarez and Jonathan Cho are getting in the way of their ability to keep the gravy train flowing. Now, because I mentioned Jonathan Cho, I felt like I had to talk about this on the show today. Jonathan was arrested in Las Vegas. So I think we have a video I'll play in a second, but a little context. He was in Las Vegas covering a No Kings. And I was in Las Vegas at the same time. I didn't even know he was down there. I was like, Jonathan, I would have bailed you out. So he's down there covering No Kings. And Las Vegas police were like, very, you will not be on the streets. Like, and I admire that, right? You stay on the sidewalks. Well, Jonathan stepped off the sidewalk. Here's what happened.
Hey, no. All right. We're not doing this. We're not doing this again. We told you twice. Stay on the road. Twice.
I'm a journalist, guys. Why? I literally stepped off the sidewalk, guys.
Jonathan. So look, they said, because you can see Jonathan, he literally puts one foot off the sidewalk and he's trying to record and stuff. And they're like, no, we've already given you two warnings. Now you're being arrested. So Jonathan posted this, like, 24 hours later, obviously. I hate to laugh because it sounds like this was pretty traumatic. He says, I spent more than 12 hours in jail with a DUI suspect, an accused wife beater, and a homeless drug addict. They made me strip down and change into an orange jumpsuit. I'm now facing a misdemeanor, first time in my life. He says, I'm still pro-police, but for the first time ever, I now know what over-policing at a power trip looks like. I look forward to my day in court with Officer Schmidt. I also plan to file numerous complaints with Internal Affairs and the Citizen Review Board. So Jonathan feels like this was way too heavy-handed and that as a journalist, he ought to have been able to document what was going on. And the charge, it says, they call it walking in roadway when sidewalk provided. So jaywalking. Basically accused of jaywalking in Vegas. And it's got his little booking photo where he's, can you bring that back up? Look at his smirk in his booking photo. Inmate number 7542367. And I was in Vegas while this happened. Man, I would have gone down there and demanded his release.
I'm actually so bummed you guys didn't know each other was down there. Because that would have been
Would have ended up in jail too. I'm like, Jonathan's stepping off the sidewalk. I might as well step off the sidewalk as well. So I'm curious, is it fair if Las Vegas police said no walking on the roadway? They say they warned him twice. I don't know if that's true. You see it in the video. Is it right to have arrested our friend Jonathan Cho? Man, but strip searched or like stripped down, put into an orange jumpsuit in a cell with homeless druggies and wife beaters and stuff. That's scary because he stepped off a sidewalk. I will also say, you know, ticket him, but did you have to book him into jail for jaywalking? That seems a little absurd. And I know that other places take law and order more seriously than they do here, but in that situation, you're really going to bring him to jail and he's going to have to spend 12 hours in jail for jaywalking? That seems a little crazy.
That officer looks so young.
He does.
And he just looked like he had it with everyone. So, I mean, I think that Jonathan got his frustration that for everyone.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure there are people testing the limits and stuff. And they're like, I don't even know if you're a real journalist, whatever it is. But anyway, Jonathan ended up in jail over the weekend in Las Vegas. And not even for a fun reason. If you're going to jail in Las Vegas, it better be something fun. You know what I mean? Counting cards or something.
Because it doesn't really stay in Vegas.
Yeah. All right. We are going to talk about the fight going on at the King Ranch in Washington State coming up next. It's gotten the attention of the federal government and really one of the most profound property rights disputes in the entire country right now. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. Go to rhawa.org, rhawa.org. It is a growing organization serving Washington's housing providers. And they provide resources to you on an individual basis, make sure you're up to date with all the rules, regulations, etc. But they're also fighting on your behalf in Olympia, at city council meetings, at county council meetings to try to stop some of these bad housing policies from being pushed through. So that's part of the membership dues. And then they have events all across the state of Washington, really fun, going on all the time. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org. It is Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right. We got a lot of requests from you guys to cover what's happening at the King Ranch in Eastern Washington. And we'd actually been working to get the Kings on the show for quite a while. So they have now a website, Support King Ranch, and they are trying to get public support and political support in their fight against the state of Washington. I think this is one of the most important property rights disputes happening in the entire country right now. So essentially, the King Ranch, this all started in a dispute over stock ponds, where the state of Washington accuses them of disturbing wetlands. So we had the Kings on Sundays with subscribers.
They accused me of disturbing wetlands without authorization, that I excavated out these wetlands, and basically in their wording say I created pools of water. And they're just, the ecology's never been on my land because it's private property. And so they're using satellite imagery to just focus in on, say, we think there's been disturbance right there. And then that's enough for them to give me an administrative order. And then they get into the system. And then they have to come out to substantiate what they think they see.
Yeah, and they say that this is a common practice for ranchers. Make sure you get the cattle fed. It's also good for wildlife in the area. And they say these aren't wetlands. And they say they had an independent expert come out, evaluate it. They're not wetlands. They're not some protected sort of thing. And so they say, we literally did nothing wrong. Did nothing wrong at all. And now the state of Washington wants hundreds of thousands of dollars from us. And they also want us to fix these areas we allegedly disturbed, which will cost millions of dollars. They're also stripping them of leases. I mean, they are trying to run this ranch into the ground. And the Kings say, Wade and Teresa, this is over nothing at all. The secretary of the Department of Agriculture got involved in this, you might recall. Brooke Rollins, she has been a very vocal advocate for the Kings and of what's happening. Now, whether she can step in and do something in their fight against the Department of Ecology and the State Department of Natural Resources, I think it still is unclear, because at the end of the day, these are state agencies who do have their own authority. You're talking about some leases that were on state land. And I think more troubling is when something like this happens, there is very little recourse for the Kings. You know, they basically get sent to this administrative tribunal of appointees from Inslee and now Ferguson, who are going to decide their fate and whether they did this. People who aren't experts, you know, who don't know as much about the land as the Kings. And they really just feel like the state of Washington, not only them, but a lot of farmers and ranchers, this is one thing we discussed, is that they feel like the government is actively working against them rather than trying to help them.
She stepped in last fall, and when we've had two visitors from the NRCS come out and tour the ranch. So they could go back and tell her that these are not wetlands. And that was enough for them to feel good about supporting us.
Yeah.
And that was last fall.
Yeah, we had to hire experts to come out. And our experts said, these are not wetlands. I don't know what the state is talking about.
First of all, it must have felt great to have the Secretary of Agriculture and the federal government kind mm-hmm. of be part of this fight with you.
Yes, mm-hmm. it is. It really did. It really helped validate our position, if you will, because everyone was kind of like, well, we're not sure. But just because our experts, you know, we hired those experts to come out here and they determined these were not wetlands. But to have the NRCS come out and validate these are not wetlands, that really added a lot to our support.
Yeah, and they said it's because they really feel like when it comes to the state of Washington, no one is on their side or trying to help them navigate the situation.
We just need help. We need, you know, that's what I thought the Department of Ecology was, first of all, supposed to be aiding agricultural producers and succeed. That's what the government's role is supposed to be, in helping the people. They're not helping the people anymore that I can see, other they're helping themselves. Mm. And they're not... That's why Washington State's probably, you saw that, probably saw that, Washington State's 50th out of 50 as far as profitability returned back to the farmer. And they're just, they're going out of their way to make it difficult for all of us to succeed in this state.
And ecology is supposed to protect our stock water rights and our water rights, our irrigation rights. And they've just changed, totally changed.
And the question is why? You know, there's this weird wrinkle in this whole story where, you know, because they had tens of thousands of acres and it was like, how did the state even figure out or think that they disturbed wetlands? And on one of the areas where they had a lease on state land, there was a tribal member who said, oh, they've disturbed wetlands here. And so that went to the state, started the investigation, state pulled their leases on that property. And now that same property, the state is like doing a land swap with the tribe. And it's like, that sounds awful suspicious. So a tribal member just happens upon what they say is a violation. Immediately, state starts levying fines, investigating. And then the state is taking this land that the kings had leases on to run their cattle. And they're handing it to the tribe. Like, okay, there's something more suspicious going on here. And this isn't the first story like this we've talked about. I mean, to a lesser degree, but we talked to remember on Sundays with Subscribers, this rancher north of Spokane. He's like 85 years old, and he'd always been using his water rights to water on two sides of a road on his land. And all of a sudden, they said, you can't water these crops on this side of the road anymore. And he's like, well, I don't have a choice. Then I won't have crops over there and I'll lose my farm. I'll go out of business. And they said, you can't do it. And they've fined him hundreds of thousands of dollars. They put a lien on his house. He's 85 years old. It's like, as the state, are you actively trying to put farms and ranches out of business? And I get it that laws are laws and rules are rules, but you can be reasonable, right? Especially in that case with an 85-year-old guy. Figure something out to make sure that he can continue to farm. It's absolutely insane what's happening. Okay, we'll get to our subscriber show poll coming up next. Comments from the live stream. First, if you are thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Preston, an undivided viewer and listener, did, and he was so happy with the service that he got from Wes and his team.
He works out of East King County, so he deals with multi-million-dollar homes. My house is not anywhere near what he sells, but he made it feel like I was one of his biggest clients. I had some really stupid questions, I felt like, and ChatGPT couldn't answer them, so I felt like I was a moron reaching out to Evie sometimes, and she had a lot of grace with her answers. So just him, the way he puts you at ease, the way he treats you like the most important client, and just his whole staff, how helpful they are.
Yeah, and every time somebody's messaging me like, that's it, I'm moving, I'm like, contact Wes. It's Wes Jones. Go to sellwithwes.com. Go from Sell With Wes to Sold With Wes. You can peruse his recent listings, homes he's sold, how they perform for their clients. And then you can also read reviews from clients of Wes as well. Clients just like Preston. And while you're there, there's some other features he has on the website, like their home value calculator. You can figure out how much your home is worth. But I would recommend getting a market analysis with Wes just to sort of set your expectations. I mean, with everything going on and so many people trying to move out of the state, I think it's just good to get a lay of the land from him before you take that plunge. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. Okay, in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, I asked you guys in this multi-pronged fight against the income tax, which avenue of attack do you believe has the best chance of overturning the income tax? So whether you support the income tax or not, which one do you think has the best chance of overturning it? An initiative, the lawsuit or neither, Brandy? Wishful thinking. Nicole?
I think I'm going to go with the lawsuit.
Okay.
Why? I really hope that judges aren't as, you know, sided as we think they are. I hope it's not as corrupt a system as we are being led to believe by Democrats. Because why else would they do this unless they believed it was going to go in their way because they knew it was coming?
Yeah.
But
I mean, I would say lawsuit if some of the sane Supreme Court candidates win in November. But if the makeup is still the same, I think the lawsuit is like 0% chance because I feel like they've already counted the vote. So I'm going to say initiative. And look, at the end of the day, if voters are duped into voting for the thing and saying, oh, it's just a tax on the rich. And then maybe in 2 years they realize, oh, that wasn't just a tax on the rich. And then you run another initiative to try to repeal it once they change it. But I think I have more faith in definitely Let's Go Washington can knock out an initiative real quick. Yes. Like they'll get the amount of signatures they need ASAP.
For sure. It will. It's just once it gets to ballot, is it going to make it?
Well, all the lies and stuff like that. So, but I'm going to go with initiative. Let's see what you guys have to say. What do you think, Nicole? What are they going to say? Hold on. I just.
Really? Is that
beep, 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 beep. All right. Lawsuit. 52% of you think the lawsuit has the best chance of overturning the income tax. You agree with Nicole on that? Steve says, can't we do both? Yeah, Steve, of course we could do both. You can do all of it. But I'm just saying, which has the best chance? E, they are all lawyers, so legally is the only way out unless we do what Antifa does. The silent majority refuses to participate. Look, if you refuse to participate, there's still... Oh, I suppose you mean in paying the tax. I also thought with B&O tax, can't we stage like a mass don't pay it? Or start spending cash for everything? Give businesses cash so they don't have to claim it? And just run your business like, you know what? Screw you, state of Washington. I'm just going to run my business. You can't shut it down. What are you going to do? Come into my house and take away my microphones or come to the studio? And like, what are you going to do? Literally.
Well, fine you, right?
Fine. I'm never going to pay it. I don't know. Let's see. Tiffany said, look, I'll still vote and participate in democracy. I'll still sign every Let's Go Washington initiative that comes out and get my friends and family to sign. But I truly feel like it's in vain. I feel defeated. Don't feel. Well, look, I get it. There are a lot of days I feel that way as well. Maybe I don't let on as much as I, because this is what we do for a living and I believe in it. Like I believe the state can be saved or I wouldn't do this. I would just move away to Florida and bask in the sun. But I understand. I'm not going to tell anybody not to feel defeated. Robert says we need to fight on every front. And I agree. Alex, is there any way to have a lawsuit at the federal level? I don't think so, because this specifically is about a constitutional issue with a state constitution rather. Rick says, why bother with the state Supreme Court? They have proven themselves partisan and not following the law. Well, look, I think you have to. I think you have to because it is such a cut and dry violation of the state constitution that let's put those people on the record. Let's put those judges on the record to say, to come up with some crazy ruling where they say that it's not against the state constitution, where it actually, when it actually is. Let's see. Greg, I have no confidence in a lawsuit because the state Supreme Court being stacked and packed with Democratic judges. Matthew says the state will challenge any initiative and get in front of the ideological Supreme Court that will go out of its way to find something in language. This is a good point that even if the initiative is successful, then they're still going to challenge the initiative. Right. And that challenge could ultimately end up at the same court. So that is depressing. But you know what? We're going to fight on every front. Exhausting. Fight on every front.
And they're just costing money. They're just costing everyone money.
Yeah. And then they'll fight the will of voters with your money. Just crazy.
Exactly.
Okay. On comments from the live stream on this multi-pronged fight we're in, Jeffrey Thistle says, do you think Seattle could lose their voting majority in the state? Because they will need to for a meaningful change to happen. I feel like my vote from Bellingham, Washington gets outvoted 2-1 by Seattle crazies. Well, I mean, no, because Seattle's the most populated area in the state. I don't foresee that changing anytime soon.
King County.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Julie, didn't we already do an initiative last time? Do they even matter? Yeah, there was an initiative to the legislature saying we will not tax income. And they turned around and taxed income, which will be part of the lawsuit, obviously.
It just doesn't. What?
It's crazy. On the Sound Transit disaster, Matthew says Sound Transit is a rogue agency at best and a criminal conspiracy at worst. Dory Monson, November 7th, 2017. Dory was so right about Sound Transit.
Oh, yeah.
That's literally a Dory quote from 2017. after SD3 was passed. Rogue agency at best, criminal conspiracy at worst.
He's been right on a lot of things. The only thing, maybe not the flying cars so much yet. I think he thought we were going to have him by now.
Oh, he did?
I can't remember what the year was, but it's coming up. And I don't know. If we don't have him in the next 5 years, I think he was wrong on that one thing,
right? Okay. RM Calm says, Sound Transit living up to its low standard. Milkman, 3 years late, way over budget. Sounds like a Democrat band. On Andrea being punished for exposing the reality of what's happening in tiny houses, late night with Tina, these places are why our ER is overburdened nightly. It's all very sad. Oh, 100%. They also put a strain on 911 resources. Police responses didn't like overnight the Plymouth Housing Place in Bellevue become the number one source of 911 calls. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's ridiculous.
And it's the reason people aren't using the Sound Transit that you would like us to use. It's the reason, I mean, it makes people's decision to drive. And that's exactly what you're trying to talk them out of.
Yeah. Chuck Keller, Unbelievable, sponsored by me. Yes, thank you to Chuck for our daily Unbelievable sponsorship. Cho being arrested in Las Vegas. Matt, look on the bright side. Cho gets to check more intersectionality boxes. Formerly incarcerated Asian American award-winning independent journalist Jonathan Cho. Yes, now he's a formerly incarcerated person. Good for you, Jonathan. On the King Ranch fight, Necro Two Shoes, the state wants the land to repurpose for homeless death camps. Oh, no. The state doesn't want to put homeless people to death. They need them alive for as long as possible, which is kind of contrary because they're letting them put needles in their arm. But they need the homeless industrial complex kicking.
Right. And they definitely don't want to put it away from everyone. They want it right next door to you.
Yes.
They want it right next door to us all.
Oh, yeah. Mo says they probably want the land for a data center. Yeah. Or a battery storage system. One of those two.
That might be.
Lomez J. Brandy, I know this is off topic, but we loved your short video covering the No Kings protests. Much love, respect. Juliet and Jenny say hi. Hi, Nicole, too. Hello to all of you. Hello. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I put a little video out about how stupid the No Kings protests were, and it did pretty well on social media.
We all love your ranting on social media.
Well, I was talking to some guy at the airport the other day where he said, I love when you post videos from your couch, because I was like, oh, this is good. He's like, I know it's going to be good because I am doing it without makeup on, I guess. So that makes it more spontaneous.
<It's brave.
laughs> You know, I'm just so angry. I go, Nicole probably, whenever I make one, I'm like, Nicole is probably laughing at me right now.
Oh, only because it takes you, I mean, you're very, you know, thorough in your makeup application before the show.
What are you trying
and
to
your
say?
Hair.
That I wear
so
too much makeup.
So important here, but then you're like, I'll just do it right here and I don't care what I'm wearing or what I have on my face.
I mean, why should I care? At the end of the day, that's what I look like, right?
No, and I agree.
I have a husband already.
Maybe every day you shouldn't care.
Well, the lighting would be rough. You know, the lighting would be. Yeah, I got a husband. Who am I trying to, like, I'm not trying to fool anyone.
Yeah.
That's what I look like. I kind of got a lazy eye. My eyebrows are half tattooed. That's it. I got a couple pimples and some wrinkles.
People like authenticity.
Sure. Mm-hmm. They're probably like, oh, I knew it. She wears a pound of makeup on TV. Okay, we'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, if you're looking to save some money, I mean, gosh, gas prices are about $6 a gallon, even more for diesel. So if you're a family trying to cut costs whenever you can, I highly recommend just taking another look at your insurance with our friends at First Mark. And if they can save you money, they will save you money. We hear from so many people who are saving hundreds of dollars a month, if not $1,000 a month. And that all adds up. And just think about, I mean, if you're saving, I think it was, Robin said, I joined First Mark, I'm saving $100 a month. That's $1,200 a year. That goes a long way, and especially when you don't need to be spending that much on insurance. I mean, the thing with First Mark is they're always trying to strike a balance. They're not this company where you're going to go in and in 10 minutes they're going to like give you some cheap insurance just so you can save money. No, they want you to be properly covered. They want to make sure you have the insurance you need. You're not paying for insurance you don't need, because I mean, if you're paying for insurance and then something horrible happens and it was crap insurance, then you're just screwed. And like, what's the point in that? So it's all a balancing act. So go to firstmarkinsurance.com to take the First Mark challenge today. firstmarkinsurance.com. And the very best part is they're a local company. They work for you, not the insurance company. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. The Secretary of the Department of Education saying what we all know to be true. Kids in our public schools are screwed.
Tell us where we are with where kids are doing in just scholastically in the country.
We're doing terribly. I mean, our education systems failed our kids. The latest NAEP scores, which were released just after the president took office, and that's the National Report Card, only about 30% of high schools and eighth graders can read proficiently or do math proficiently. Think about that. Public schools across the country, only about 30%. Some places 35%, mm-hmm. but it's just terrible.
Not going great. That's the head of the Department of Education. How's it going? Not well. Just great. All right. Apparently, I missed a few super chats. I do apologize. I shall read them right now. Moon Goddess, I didn't misgender you. You misgendered yourself, and I just refuse to play along. My rights don't end where your feelings begin. Sorry, not sorry. Fatigue, talking about radical gender ideology. Chuck also said, Happy Taco Tuesday, amigos. Tacos sound delicious right now.
Kind of does.
What's really sad is when Miranda copies Super Chats into the sheet for me, I don't get to see all the cool emojis you guys put down. Yeah, and he had some good alien over. Ones and some taco ones. Let me make sure I didn't miss anything else. Little Miss J, we'd love to see you ladies. We love to see you ladies smile even with the bad news. Yeah, I got to smile. We got to smile and we got to laugh, you know? Because then otherwise, I go directly home and I just cry. I just cry my eyes out. Then I suck it up and get back here and just pretend like I'm not deeply depressed every day. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Thank you for smiling through the pain with us and the frustration. If you'd like to support our show, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the little banner that says support the show. You can also shop our merch store. Let your common sense freak flag fly. Got hats. What are you looking at? Why are you smiling?
I'm laughing because Miranda, this whole time, I knew she was late getting home because of traffic and there was an accident or something. But she says, give me a break, guys. I'm pulled off the side of the freeway and sitting in traffic for an hour trying to get home to you, but pulling
she
comments
wants sympathy.
On the side of the freeway.
We want sympathy for me?
For missing the, you know, she was apologizing for missing the super chats and yeah.
Interesting.
Anyway.
Sounds like
thanks,
you gotta
Miranda.
Have a team meeting. Thanks, Miranda.
Dedication.
Never safe to pull off to the side of the road. Very dangerous. Okay, undividedpod.com, shop our merch store. See you tomorrow.